Good afternoon, everyone. When I was in high school, I played football. So when I went to college, I thought I'd turn out as well. But after 2 days of being on the line of scrimmage, I was acutely aware of one thing that was going to happen to me. As I lined up 168 pounds, wringing wet, with maybe 7 or 8 pounds of additional weight for your helmet, your cleats and shoes, and shoulder pads and hip pads, I was still looking across the line at men that were 250, 275 pounds. And to me, that spelled sheer annihilation. That's all I had to look forward to. So since we were required to have a year of PE or a sport, I quit football and I signed up for something a little more humane, boxing. After boxing for a year, however, in spite of the fact the coach said that I was, you know, pretty good, and he said, you know, you ought to continue on and try out for the boxing team, I just knew that there was one thing I lacked to be a good boxer, and that was simply I didn't have the killer instinct. I remember the first time I knocked someone out, and I felt bad about it for 4 or 5 days later. And besides, during that year, I had read somewhere that every time a boxer takes a blow to the head, it takes 30 seconds off of his life. And that's why you will see boxers, when they're old, referred to as being punchy or punch drunk. They'll stagger around, and sometimes the collateral damage to the optic nerve renders them blind. So anyway, I figured that 1 year was enough. So I went home that summer to work, and 2 weeks after I'd been home, a friend of mine called me and said, you want to go to a dance in Everett? And I said, sure. So he picked me up, we went, parked the car, and walked into this, where the dance hall was, and you kind of went up the steps, and there was a foyer before you actually got to where the dance floor itself was. And he was walking ahead 4 or 5 steps ahead of me through this crowd of high school kids and college kids all milling around. And I never saw exactly what he did or how it happened, but he happened to push someone. And they were off balance to begin with, and so they were floundering around, and Dick just kept going on because he wasn't even aware of what he'd done. The problem was, by the time the guy recovered his balance, I was where Dick had been. I'd walked up to, and so he turned around and looked at me and glared at me, and he said, why'd you do that? And I didn't have a clue as to what he was talking about. I said, what are you talking about? This, he said, and he came up and shoved me. Well, you know, that didn't really faze me. I thought, oh, I'll just brush it off. But no, he said, you shoved me. And I said, I did not. And about this time, my testosterone level, I think, was starting to rise a little. You know, there's nothing more cocky than a college freshman who's home for the first time, and especially one that's had a year of boxing. You know, I could feel this kind of sense of arrogance going through my mind. But anyway, I was trying to back out of it. I didn't want to do anything, get involved in anything. I said, well, just forget it. He said, we're not going to forget it. He said, you don't want to go outside. And of course, by that time, I said, okay, let's go. So he turned around and walked outside, and I followed him, and we had this entourage of about 13 or 14 of his friends and acquaintances behind us. Walked out to the sidewalk, down in front of the dance floor hall, and then down into the alley about a third of the way, and he stopped. I walked up a few feet away from him, and this whole line just came up and circled around us like it was a ring, and I just stood there waiting. And he started coming at me, and after a year of boxing, I instinctively went just like this when I saw him coming. And as he got closer, I hit him with a left jab. You know, it's basically a defensive punch to keep him away. Well, this went on for 2 or 3 minutes, and his face was starting to get puffy, and there was a little cut under one eye, and I heard someone in the ring around us say, well, this guy knows what he's doing. And I think about that time he'd figured that out as well. So all of a sudden he rushed me and grabbed me, put his arms around me and knocked me down. And as I hit the pavement, I could feel a brand new shirt I was wearing, beautiful blue and gray shirt, tear. And if, a few minutes after that, I could feel the, you know, the blood trickling out. Up until this point, I was kind of nonchalant about what was going on, but that really started to irritate me, getting my that brand new shirt torn. So the next time he came at me, I didn't fool around with the left jab. I let loose with my right hand as hard as I could throw. I don't know where I hit him. It may have been his jaw, it may have been his collarbone, it may have been his arm. It certainly didn't do anything to him, but the pain reverberated all the way from my knuckle up to my shoulder. About that time, we heard sirens in the distance, and they appeared to be coming closer. I don't know if they were coming for us, but we both thought we better get out of there. And by that time, we were kind of like best friends, you know, walking out the alley side by side. It's kind of like he'd gained some respect for me. It's just funny the way things like that happen. But I went back in and I found Dick and I said, you know, I don't feel like dancing. I've got a torn shirt and blood's coming out, oozing out of my elbow. My hand is throbbing and beginning to swell. I was wearing a light pair of khaki pants. I had grease and dirt all over them from rolling around in the alley. And so we went home, and the next day my hand continued to swell. A few days, same thing. And then it finally subsided. The pain started to go away. And after 4 or 5 weeks, it was pretty much back to normal. But to this day, if you were to come up and feel the side of this hand between the two knuckles and then feel the side between my right hand, there's a little lump of calcium there where I hit him. A lasting reminder of that one moment in time. Well, please turn to Proverbs 26 and verse 17. Proverbs 26, verse 17. A very practical scripture, a very practical in what it says. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. And I figure that pretty well described that little incident that happened. Well, we've got four small dogs, and they're very affectionate, very loving. But I know that if I tried to pick one of them up by its ears, or if I tried to even pull them by their ears, very likely I'd feel those incisors into my hand up to their jaw, because it's a very, very painful type of thing. And so any time that you get involved in something, you're going to pay the consequences. And like I say, I have a lasting reminder here. There's another aspect to this, though, that I think affects us a little more acutely. I doubt if any of you have been brawling out in some alley, you know. And I shouldn't have done it. Like I said, this was 5 years before I was called, and so, you know, you have to chalk it up to youth and indestructibility and anything else, testosterone and that year of boxing. However, had I thought about it going back there, you know, I wasn't in a ring that had ropes to hold me up. I didn't have my headgear on, I didn't have a mouth guard, I didn't have boxing gloves on, so I wasn't really prepared for that type of fight. Anyway, turn to James 3 and verse 8. James 3 and verse 8, which says, James talking here, but the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. How many marriages have been destroyed, relationships ruined, because of the sparring match that goes on between husband and wife? Just as deadly as some boxer's punch, those words that are spewed out of a person's mouth can never be taken back. And I don't agree with the adage that sticks and stones can break your bones, but names can never hurt you. Names can be devastating to you. You, in the heat of anger, can say something to your spouse or a friend or a church member or a minister or someone else in your life, a coworker, and you can say it in such a way that it will register on them and they will never forget it. The damage that can be done by words can be just as deadly as a boxer's punches. Turn to 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. The day of Pentecost is coming up a week from tomorrow. We're going to hear messages about God's Holy Spirit, how you get it, how you keep it, how you lose it, how you cultivate it, the benefits of it, a variety of different things. Very critical, very important to every one of us in this room. It says, or Timothy says, but God has not given us the spirit of fear. You don't have to worry about going down some alley and duking it out with someone in a brawl. You know, you shouldn't have that kind of fear. Conversely, he's given you power. Power to do whatever battle you have to do with whatever opponent you're confronted with, because that same spirit gives you love and it gives you a sound mind. It gives you a sound mind to help you make decisions about where you should be and where you shouldn't be. I should never have been in that alley. That's the reality. And you know, if that had happened at this time, and I'd been in some part of Los Angeles or New York, and that line of friends and acquaintances been around, I might not have walked out of there, and they wouldn't have been using probably fists to settle that. They would have probably had knives or guns or something like that if it was a gang. I mean, it was a very dangerous thing, but like I said, part of it, you know, you ascribe to youth and your exuberance and your indestructibility. In any event, God's Spirit is the type of thing that we should aspire to. We know in our lives when maybe that spirit's flickering, when that light is a little dim, when we perhaps are not as connected as we should be, when perhaps we haven't been studying as much or praying as much, or whatever it is we haven't done. That spirit will flicker. And it will affect your life. It will affect the things you do, the things you say, where you go, and how you conduct your lives. So as we come into the Feast of Pentecost, into the Pentecost season, be cognizant of God's Spirit, what it can do for you, how it can affect your life, how it can save your life, as it were, not only here and now, but eternally. And I'll guarantee you, if you pay attention to it, and if you cultivate God's Spirit, you'll never have to pick up a dog by the ears.